from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Fishbane.
I got Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business, what I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
I just try to work hard and tell good stories. I should also note, I know the sports caster of the year for Illinois is no longer covering Illinois team, and I am not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
All right, well, good.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Fishbane had a sit-down with Matt Eberflus that we talked about yesterday and just talked about some of the granular defensive details that would lie within. And he joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today as we are here at Stadium Swim at Circa in Las Vegas on a lovely Friday. Kevin Fishbane, the Bears have just made a move. What do you know about pass-rushing linebacker Darrell Taylor, whom they got for the sixth-round pick?
Hello, friends. Happy Friday.
Hi. Yes, you too.
I don't know a ton, but I'll give you guys this insight I just got from our Seahawks writer, Michael Sean Duggar. He passed along this note that the Seahawks essentially had too many outside linebackers, and Taylor kind of became the odd man out for them. 21 and a half sacks over the last three seasons. Productive rushing the passer, but is not as consistent as a run defender as the other edge players they have, which is why they found him expendable. This is from my colleague over in Seattle. So that's kind of the Seahawks view. Obviously, we know the Bears have wanted to bolster that edge rush spot. And I went back to find Dane Brugler's report of Taylor coming out. The guy was second in the SEC in sacks and TFLs for two seasons, second-round pick. So obviously he's got a lot of those tools. He's got the length. So he's got a lot of things you like. And then I don't know if this is – I mean, it seems – I don't know if this, like, fixes the problem, right? This isn't Matthew Judon. But we kind of – I've kind of been preparing for them to just go in with what they had. And now you have somebody else who can be your number three rotational guy as you continue to get Austin Booker ready to go.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you kind of felt like they were trying to move in a direction where they could get more heat on the quarterback and maybe take some of the pressure off of Montez Sweat. So do you think they're done with this, or do you think there's still some roster churn that could happen at that position?
Well, I think they probably are done at edge rusher. If, you know, it's a six-round pick for a guy who's played a lot and has been pretty productive. So you would presume he's your guy. He's your number three or number two. You can do a lot of different things with DeMarcus Walker. I'm really interested to see, guys, what they do at defensive tackle. Like, this Zach Pickens thing could be nothing. He could be at practice tomorrow afternoon. He could be out a month. We have no idea. And they already didn't have a lot of defensive tackles. I'm sure you guys saw Matt Eberflus. I know you're talking to him after this. Said that's a concern, that the depth of that position. Maybe the addition of Taylor gives him more flexibility to slide Walker inside more often, and they really like what he can do for them inside. But you still kind of want somebody else there. So if Pickens' injury is a week-to-week thing, that's the area where you imagine they're going to be scouring the waiver wire on Tuesday night to potentially bring somebody in.
Do we have any updates that are new from last night regarding players who were injured in the game, whether it's Douglas Coleman or maybe Larry Borum? Have you heard anything yet?
I have not heard anything yet, Layla. I was thinking about this last night with Larry Borum. It's just never good when a guy's going off the field on a cart. I know it, like, sounds kind of simple, But especially somebody like that, knowing how important that game is, you got to imagine if he could have gutted it out, even just stayed on the sideline, he would have been able to do it. Douglas Coleman, it seems like from what Matt Eberflus said last night that things were looking positive at that moment, but we have not heard any updates about those guys. I know you guys will probably get them. Hopefully you'll get them in a few minutes.
I can't believe I'm asking this, but is Patrick Scales okay to in the next couple of weeks to start the season?
Dan, it's a great question. You should be asking this. It's like every day I walk out to practice and I said, has anybody laid eyes on this man? Where is Patrick Scales? And, you know, because we see the group of players on the bikes and he's not over there. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes with your rehab, they want you doing stuff that's indoors. But there's a progression. Like Jacob Martin, for example, we didn't see him for 2 weeks, and then he progressed to join the outdoor group of rehabilitating players. So I'm not sure, again, with Patrick Scales, he could be back at practice tomorrow. He could be totally fine. We don't know. But I think that if he can't go week one, you got to consider bringing in somebody who veteran. And it's a weird thing, because you got this Cameron Lyons guy who's been with the operation all summer, so why wouldn't you turn to him? But I got to imagine, with the importance of that role in a regular season game, you'd want somebody with a little bit more experience. So no answers yet on Patrick Scales. It's a good question, though, Dan.
Fish, it seemed like the Bears yesterday gave Velus Jones an opportunity to show what he can do, and I thought he did very well with 17 carries or whatever it was at the end of the game. How do you make sense of what he's done since being converted at running back, and do the Bears even have room for what he is in that position room?
You know, Lawrence, I think I've become like a Velus truther over the past few months. Just like, I just keep just being like, he's going to be on the team. I just keep believing it. Like they're going to find a spot for him. And now you have this running back situation where, like, Here's the problem with it, is when in a game can you see Velus Jones being in the backfield? Like, you're not putting him, he's not ahead of DeAndre Swift, he's not ahead of Khalil Herbert, he's not giving you what Roschon Johnson gives you. So how often is a number four running back getting a touch? Now, maybe it's something as simple as he's a decoy, he's getting a jet sweep, he's a change of pace guy. Either way, I still think that his value on kickoff returns should be enough, but that is under the assumption that they believe he is good enough on kickoff returns, or better, so much better than Tyler Scott, DeAndre Carter, Khalil Herbert, that it's worth keeping him. And I'll also say this, guys, about Velus, because I know he's such a hot topic because of, like, we can say it, he did not live up to third-round billing at all. Like, simple as that. I don't know what the conversation would be right now if he was a sixth-round pick. Like, we'd be like, oh, yeah, he's definitely on the team. He's a kickoff returner if he was a sixth-round pick. Like, are we only assuming he's out because he didn't live up to that billing? Because when I look through the roster and, like, we're going through who guys number 54, 55, 56 are, which of those players is so important that you're going to move on from somebody who has the traits Velus Jones has? Like, I get all the frustration that he's caused in different roles, but, like, there's something there on kickoff return and maybe as a change of pace guy in the backfield for 2-3 touches a game. Isn't that worth trying, as opposed to you need that fifth safety, you need that sixth linebacker? Like, I think if he's at the bottom of your roster, I think that's okay.
I hate being this person. I really do. And he seems like a very nice guy. But it's not just that. He's inconsistent as hell. Like, there are times where you're asking what the decision-making process is during an actual real game. I don't know why they're trying to save him so much. We're still trying to figure out Tyler Scott, and I don't think he was used properly by the previous offensive coordinator. He's versatile and has a various set of skills where he's actually shown that he can hold on to the ball better than Velus can when he catches it. And my whole point is, you know, if this is a guy who's not just making poor football decisions, you know, when he's not fumbling, like, you've given this man enough runway. I think the reason you're holding on to him is because he's a third-round pick and you want to be right about
it.
But you're not. Like, I would much rather see a guy like Tyler Skaff, if we're talking about that kind of player, have more opportunities to where we can further figure out someone else, because I feel like the book has already been written, or at least that man, who is respected, and I appreciate that, needs a change of scenery.
What she said.
So what's the opposite of a Bayless truth there? Because that was...
A Bayless reeler?
Yeah, no, you're right. I here's, like, my only pushback is that if Bayless Jones makes the team, okay, he's either going to be inactive on game day, or he's going to be your kickoff returner, and that's it. Maybe he gets to a jet sweep, like, here or there. I don't see the harm, because he's not going to be your punt returner. That's never going to happen. It hasn't happened in 2 years. He's done with punt returns. He's not going to be a wide receiver. Like, if he's on the team, he's just returning kickoffs. And I don't know. And that's where, look, he's the second best kickoff returner in football in the last 2 years. So, like, if that's all he's doing, I don't know who he's taking a spot away from.
But that's not like, all Tyler he's Scott, doing. They have him running right now.
Well, they have him running right now because it's a preseason game against a bunch of third-string players. Like, in a game, he's not getting any handoffs. He's not getting handoffs over Swift, over Johnson, over Herbert. They're just, again, I do see the possibility that this kind of desperation move of putting him in the backfield is to just try to force it and try to give him another value aside from kickoff return. But even if they see value there, I don't even know what that looks like in a regular season game. That might be one carry. Like, that might be it, just as a little gadget. I just he's not taking Tyler Scott's role, but I do think it's I'm glad you brought up Tyler Scott, Layla, because I thought he had a good night last night. And I do think that if they believe that Tyler Scott is better than Bayless Jones on this new kickoff return rule, then that's your answer, because you don't need Bayless Jones. But if they really believe that Bayless Jones is so good at kickoff returns, and again, the numbers bore that out the last 2 years, like, why not keep him? I mean, look, they kept Trent Taylor last year solely to catch punts. He took up a roster spot just to catch punts. That's it. So if you're going to be getting 4 to 7 kickoffs a game and you think this guy is that good, I don't see the harm in keeping him on the roster if he's not going to be really doing anything else, unless you can really push to me whose spot he's taking away from.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, you know, they're position rich in other rooms, and that's my concern. Like, when you have you know, your third round or fourth round offensive lineman activated and he's injured and you still can't play him and you just saw one of your most reliable backups go down, that does that mean you have to carry an extra alignment? Like, these are the things I worry about
when
late at
carry
night.
Carry an extra defensive tackle.
Exactly. Like, are you having to, you know, like, you have a packed running back room. You have a packed receiver room. How many safeties do you want on this team? You know, those are the questions I have when it comes to trying to figure out this individual.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Layla. Like, if the injury situation, we in our latest projection, we have them keeping 10 offensive linemen because of we don't know what's going on with Ryan Bates, and I don't know when could you feel comfortable having Amagaji in the lineup or even just as a backup on game day.
I was going to ask you that. Asking the rhetorical question. Do you?
Yeah, I think Amagaji is going to have to be inactive for a month, 2 months. Like, how long is it going to take for somebody who hasn't played in a game, who played at Yale, to be in game shape for
the NFL game?
So, well, they can't put him on the pup list now, Dan, because he was, like, they activated him. So now, and you can't put him on IR right now unless he has an injury. So I think he's just going to be inactive every game until he's ready to go. So that's why you might need that extra lineman. So all those roster machinations do put yourself in a spot where somebody like Bayless Jones could be your odd man out. I think the number one decision right there is he that good at this new kickoff return rule that he is valuable enough to keep him? And if they say yes, then he's there. If they believe Tyler Scott or DeAndre Carter or Khalil Herbert can handle it just fine, then you can see Bayless Jones being taking an exit with Layla slamming the door behind him as he leaves.
Kicking him in the ass.
I need somebody to be more consistent at this point in his career.
You had the opportunity to talk with Matt Eberflus. We are going to talk with him at 12:30. Fish, I texted you. The piece that you did watching film with Eberflus was really fantastic.
That was so good.
What's something that you took away from that experience that maybe you hadn't considered when discussing Matt Eberflus?
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. And obviously it means a lot that you're talking about it on the air yesterday, because it was a really fun story. And I think you guys recognize it, too. This is him in his element. And that was what I was – when I pitched the story, that was my hope. And, like, I sat there for 45 minutes like I was getting a lesson in football. And I think that, like, for me, I'm like, watching the game differently now, because this is an obvious example, but Kyler Gordon's sack from last week, my first thought when that happened was, he's got to get the ball out. He has to get the ball out in that situation. And, you know, and, like, from my time with Eberflus doing that film review, I know that it's going to come up that you have to get that ball out. I'm watching Terrell Smith with that interception. I'm thinking, Matt Eberflus is going to talk about the exact thing that Smith should have done with his footwork, or somebody should have done blocking, so that was a pick six instead of an interception. I think that these specific details, like, because he is so, you know, Dan, I heard you kind of talking yesterday about that part of the story about the first down, you know, knowing where they are in the field. If we get a tackle for loss, I think, Layla, you compared it to, you know, the first batter of an inning. You know, if you get that stop in this part of the field on first down, here is the analytics, what it tells you. And so you can just kind of tell, like, the way he's thinking. So I do find myself, you know, like, watching the game a little bit differently, seeing the way that he views this stuff, and knowing that he is trying. This is one thing somebody told me about Eberflus as I was working on the story and just kind of asking around, because one of the things I wanted to learn, guys, how many coaches have you talked to who say, I'm all about the details, right? And so I wanted to know, like, I've never sat in a film session with a coach, so, like, an NFL head coach, so I didn't know how rare that was. I had a couple people who know him well say, like, that is rare. And one of the things about Eberflus is he is trying to win on the margins. Like, that is his thing. Like, he wants that extra yard, that extra step, anything that's going to help him to try to get this team to win when there's just such a slim margin of error.
I wonder how that translates to head coaching. I understand, like, watching film and, you know, being a positional coach, being a coordinator, and harping on the details and you're rewarding when things are done right, all of that. But when it comes, where and how are those margins defined when you are the guy in charge of everything?
It's a great question, Dan, because nobody ever questioned Matt Eberflus' defensive coaching philosophies, right? Like, we know that that's what he's good at. So I do think that the way he kind of uses analytics when he talks about defense, how does that factor in a third down decision, a fourth down decision? You know, last year we saw the kickoff. They decided to go ahead and return all the time. You know, they had done some research and decided that was better for their team last year to do that. So I do think that the way his mind is about trying to win in those margins, whether it's just getting that one step closer, turning your toe towards the ball, is the same thing that he might think about when it's fourth and one. And not every decision is going to be right. Obviously, he had some ones that backfired last year. But you can kind of tell that he wants to win those situations. And he put, like, the Bears put a lot of resources in their analytics department and having somebody in his ear who's kind of going through all these different scenarios about penalties and yard line and downs and situations and all that stuff. I mean, you guys saw the little clip from Hard Knocks where they were going through referee bios, right? Again, like, that's a way to, if your quarterback's got it in with the refs, it's winning on the margins, right? Giving you any kind of little edge you can get.
What do you think is the success of the Bears preseason, and where do you think they can improve?
Well, I think the success, Lawrence, is they went 4-0, so they're obviously going to the Super Bowl, so that's exciting. You know, it's so funny because I think, like, that the coaches, you know, just the simple aspect of, we installed a plan and you guys executed the plan, you did what you're supposed to do so that we could win. Like, I think for the players to kind of see that out, even in a preseason way, is good. I heard you guys talk about the tackling. I think the tackling's been very sound. I think the discipline's been sound in terms of penalties. We've obviously seen them win the takeaway battle. Now, how is this going to translate into the regular season? Who knows? Because you're talking a lot about backup reps. But I do think that you've seen kind of little things that they harp on looking good in game situations.
At this point, is there a name that is going to, is there somebody who's going to get cut that is going to shock anyone? or have we said all the names? Whether it's Dominique Robinson or someone else. I mean, is there any presumed lock that you think isn't?
I don't think so, Dan. I mean, I know you've talked about Kari Blazingame a little bit, and like he's somebody that just he's just been here. We just kind of assume that, but Shane Waldron hasn't used a fullback really, so that just guys that like fans are recognized. Noah Sewell's an interesting one to me. I'm of the belief that like there's too much athleticism there that you have to continue to see that out and see if he can stay healthy. But he would be a name. You mentioned Dominique Robinson. I'll say this about Daniel Hardy, too. I mean, maybe this trade kind of bounces Daniel Hardy off. But, you know, one thing we have to remember is every year there's somebody that Bears fans fall in love with during the preseason. Mm-hmm. Put him on their 53s. He gets cut. Everybody goes bananas. And then nobody picks him up and he makes the practice squad. So that could be a Reddy Stewart. That could be a Daniel Hardy. Like, I remember the Alex Bars days when people would be so upset about Alex Bars not making the 53, and then lo and behold, he's on the practice squad. So we could have scenarios like that. But in terms of big names, you know, I just think some of those recent day three draft picks are kind of the ones we'll be keeping an eye on over the next few days.
Fish, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. Great job with your piece with Matt Eberflus.
Yes, we loved it.
All right. Thanks again, guys. Take care.
That's Kevin Fishbane.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Fishbane.
My guy Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business, what I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
I just try to work hard and tell good stories. I should also note, I know the sports caster of the year for Illinois is no longer covering Illinois team, and I am not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
All right, well, good.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Fishbane had a sit-down with Matt Eberflus that we talked about yesterday and just talked about some of the granular defensive details that would lie within. And he joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today as we are here at Stadium Swim at Circa in Las Vegas on a lovely Friday. Kevin Fishbane, the Bears have just made a move. What do you know about pass-rushing linebacker Daryl Taylor, whom they got for the sixth-round pick?
Hello, friends. Happy Friday.
Hi. Yes, you too.
I don't know a ton, but I'll give you guys this insight I just got from our Seahawks writer, Michael Sean Duggar. He passed along this note that the Seahawks essentially had too many outside linebackers, and Taylor kind of became the odd man out for them. 21 and a half sacks over the last three seasons. Productive rushing the passer, but is not as consistent as a run defender as the other edge players they have, which is why they found him expendable. This is from my colleague over in Seattle. So that's kind of the Seahawks view. Obviously, we know the Bears have wanted to bolster that edge rush spot. And I went back to find Dane Brugler's report of Taylor coming out. The guy was second in the SEC in sacks and TFLs for two seasons, second round pick. So obviously he's got a lot of those tools. He's got the length. So he's got a lot of things you like. And then I don't know if this fixes the problem, right? This isn't Matthew Judon. But I've been preparing for them to just go in with what they had. And now you have somebody else who can be your number three rotational guy as you continue to get Austin Booker ready to go.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you kind of felt like they were trying to move in a direction where they could get more heat on the quarterback and maybe take some of the pressure off of Montez Sweat. So do you think they're done with this, or do you think there's still some roster churn that could happen at that position?
Well, I think they probably are done at edge rusher. If, you know, it's a sixth round pick for a guy who's played a lot and has been pretty productive. So you would presume he's your guy. He's your number three or number two. You can do a lot of different things with DeMarcus Walker. I'm really interested to see, guys, what they do at defensive tackle. Like, I this Zach Pickens thing could be nothing. He could be at practice tomorrow afternoon. He could be out a month. We have no idea. And they already didn't have a lot of defensive tackles. I'm sure you guys saw Matt Eberflus. I know you're talking to him after this. Said that's a concern, that the depth of that position. Maybe the addition of Taylor gives him more flexibility to slide Walker inside more often, and they really like what he can do for them inside. But you still kind of want somebody else there. So if Pickens' injury is a week-to-week thing, that's the area where you imagine they're going to be scouring the waiver wire on Tuesday night to potentially bring somebody in.
Do we have any updates that are new from last night regarding players who were injured in the game, whether it's Douglas Coleman or maybe Larry Borum? Have you heard anything yet?
I have not heard anything yet, Layla. I was thinking about this last night with Larry Borum. It's just never good when a guy's going off the field on a cart. I know it like sounds kind of simple, but especially somebody like that, knowing how important that game is, you got to imagine if he could have gutted it out, even just stayed on the sideline, he would have been able to do it. Douglas Coleman, it seems like from what Matt Eberflus said last night that things were looking positive at that moment, but we have not heard any updates about those guys. I know you guys will probably get them. Hopefully you'll get them in a few minutes.
I can't believe I'm asking this, but is Patrick Scales okay to in the next couple of weeks to start the season?
Dan, it's a great question. You should be asking this. It's like every day I walk out to practice and I said, has anybody laid eyes on this man? Where is Patrick Scales? And, you know, because we see the group of players on the bikes and he's not over there. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes with your rehab, they want you doing stuff that's indoors. But there's a progression. Like Jacob Martin, for example, we didn't see him for 2 weeks, and then he progressed to join the outdoor group of rehabilitating players. So I'm not sure, again, with Patrick Scales, he could be back at practice tomorrow. He could be totally fine. We don't know. But I think that if he can't go week one, you got to consider bringing in somebody who's veteran. And it's a weird thing, because you got this Cameron Lyons guy who's been with the operation all summer, so why wouldn't you turn to him? But I got to imagine, with the importance of that role in a regular season game, you'd want somebody with a little bit more experience. So no answers yet on Patrick Scales. It's a good question, though, Dan.
Fish, it seemed like the Bears yesterday gave Velus Jones an opportunity to show what he can do, and I thought he did very well with 17 carries or whatever it was at the end of the game. How do you make sense of what he's done since being converted at running back, and do the Bears even have room for what he is in that position room?
You know, Lawrence, I think I've become like a Velus truther over the past few months. Just like, I just keep just being like, he's going to be on the team. I just keep believing it. Like they're going to find a spot for him. And now you have this running back situation where, like, here's the problem with it, is when in a game can you see Velus Jones playing, being in the backfield? Like, you're not putting him, he's not ahead of DeAndre Swift, he's not ahead of Khalil Herbert, he's not giving you what Roschon Johnson gives you. So how often is a number four running back getting a touch? Now, maybe it's something as simple as he's a decoy, he's getting a jet sweep, he's a change of pace guy. Either way, I still think that his value on kickoff returns should be enough, but that is under the assumption that they believe he is good enough on kickoff returns, or better, so much better than Tyler Scott, DeAndre Carter, Khalil Herbert, that it's worth keeping him. And I'll also say this, guys, about Velus, because I know he's such a hot topic because of, like, we can say it. He did not live up to third round billing at all. Like, simple as that. I don't know what the conversation would be right now if he was a sixth round pick. Like, we'd be like, oh yeah, he's definitely on the team. He's a kickoff returner if he was a sixth round pick. Like, are we only assuming he's out because he didn't live up to that billing? Because when I look through the roster and, like, we're going through who guys number 54, 55, 56 are, which of those players is so important that you're going to move on from somebody who has the traits Velus Jones has? Like, I get all the frustration that he's caused in different roles, but, like, there's something there on kickoff return and maybe as a change of pace guy in the backfield for 2-3 touches a game. Isn't that worth trying as opposed to you need that fifth safety, you need that sixth linebacker? Like, I think if he's at the bottom of your roster, I think that's okay.
I hate being this person. I really do. And he seems like a very nice guy. But it's not just that. He's inconsistent as hell. Like, there are times where you're asking what the decision-making process is during an actual real game. I don't know why they're trying to save him so much. We're still trying to figure out Tyler Scott, and I don't think he was used properly by the previous offensive coordinator. He's versatile and has a various set of skills where he's actually shown that he can hold on to the ball better than Velus can when he catches it. And my whole point is, you know, if this is a guy who's not just making poor football decisions, you know, when he's not fumbling, like, you've given this man enough runway. I think the reason you're holding on to him is because he's a third round pick and you want to be right about
it.
But he's not, but you're not. Like, I would much rather see a guy like Tyler Scott, if we're talking about that kind of player, have more opportunities to where we can further figure out someone else, because I feel like the book has already been written, or at least that man, who is respected and I appreciate that, needs a change of scenery.
What she said.
So what's the opposite of a Velus truther? Because that was
a Velus reeler.
Yeah, no, you're right. I here's, like, my only pushback is that if Velus Jones makes the team, okay, he's either going to be inactive on game day, or he's going to be your kickoff returner, and that's it. Maybe he gets a jet sweep, like, here or there. I don't see the harm. Because he's not going to be your punt returner. That's never going to happen. It hasn't happened in 2 years. He's done with punt returns. He's not going to be a wide receiver. Like, if he's on the team, he's just returning kickoffs. And I don't know. And that's where, look, he's the second best kickoff returner in football in the last 2 years. So, like, if that's all he's doing, I don't know who he's taking the spot away from.
But that's not like, all Tyler he's Scott, doing. They have him running right now.
Well, they have him running right now because it's a preseason game against a bunch of third-string players. Like, in a game, he's not getting any handoffs. He's not getting handoffs over Swift, over Johnson, over Herbert. They're just, again, I do see the possibility that this kind of desperation move, putting him in the backfield, is to just try to force it and try to give him another value aside from kickoff return. But even if they see value there, I don't even know what that looks like in a regular season game. That might be one carry. Like, that might be it, just as a little gadget. I just, like, he's not taking Tyler Scott's role, but I do think it's I'm glad you brought up Tyler Scott, Layla, because I thought he had a good night last night, and I do think that if they believe that Tyler Scott is better than Velus Jones on this new kickoff return rule, then that's your answer, because you don't need Velus Jones. But if they really believe that Velus Jones is so good at kickoff returns, and again, the numbers bore that out the last 2 years, like, why not keep him? I mean, look, they kept Trent Taylor last year solely to catch punts. He took up a roster spot just to catch punts. That's it. So if you're going to be getting 4 to 7 kickoffs a game and you think this guy is that good, I don't see the harm in keeping him on the roster if he's not going to be really doing anything else, unless you can really push to me whose spot he's taking away from.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, you know, they're position rich in other rooms, and that's my concern. Like, when you have your third round or fourth round offensive lineman activated and he's injured and you still can't play him and you just saw one of your most reliable backups go down, that does that mean you have to carry an extra alignment? Like, these are the things I worry about late at night.
Will you carry an extra defensive tackle?
Exactly. Like, are you having to, you know, like, you have a packed running back room. You have a packed receiver room. How many safeties do you want on this team? You know, those are the questions I have when it comes to trying to figure out this individual.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Lele. Like, if they the injury situation, like we in our latest projection, we have them keeping 10 offensive linemen because of we don't know what's going on with Ryan Bates, and I don't know when could you feel comfortable having Amagaji in the lineup. Or even just as a backup on game day.
I was going to ask you that. I know you're asking the rhetorical question.
I think Amagaji is going to have to be inactive for a month, 2 months. Like, how long is it going to take for somebody who hasn't played in a game, who played at Yale, to be in game shape for
the NFL game?
So, well, they can't put him on the pup list now, Dan, because they activated him. So now. And you can't put him on IR right now unless he has an injury. So I think he's just going to be inactive every game until he's ready to go. So that's why you might need that extra lineman. So all those roster machinations do put yourself in a spot where somebody like Velus Jones could be your odd man out. I think the number one decision right there is he that good at this new kickoff return rule that he is valuable enough to keep him? And if they say yes, then he's there. If they believe Tyler Scott or DeAndre Carter or Khalil Herbert can handle it just fine, then you can see Velus Jones taking an exit with Layla slamming the door behind him as he leaves.
Kicking him in the ass.
I need somebody to be more consistent at this point in his career.
You had the opportunity to talk with Matt Eberflus. We are going to talk with him at 12:30. Fish, I texted you. The piece that you did watching film with Eberflus was really fantastic.
That was so good.
What's something that you took away from that experience that maybe you hadn't considered when discussing Matt Eberflus?
Yeah, I appreciate that, guys. And obviously it means a lot that you're talking about it on the air yesterday, because it was a really fun story. And I think you guys recognize it, too. This is him in his element. And that was when I pitched the story, that was my hope. And, like, I sat there for 45 minutes like I was getting a lesson in football. And I think that, like, for me, I'm like watching the game differently now, because this is an obvious example, but Kyler Gordon's sack from last week, my first thought when that happened was he's got to get the ball out. He has to get the ball out in that situation. And, you know, and like from my time with Eberflus doing that film review, I know that it's going to come up, that you have to get that ball out. I'm watching Terrell Smith with that interception. I'm thinking Matt Eberflus was going to talk about the exact thing that Smith should have done with his footwork, or somebody should have done blocking, so that was a pick six instead of an interception. I think that these specific details, like, because he is so, you know, Dan, I heard you kind of talking yesterday about that part of the story about the first down, you mm-hmm. know, knowing where they are in the field. If we get a tackle for loss, I think, Layla, you compared it to, you know, the first batter of an inning. You know, if you get that stop in this part of the field on first down, here is the analytics, what it tells you. And so you can just kind of tell, like, the way he's thinking. So I do find myself, you know, like, watching the game a little bit differently, seeing the way that he views this stuff, and knowing that he is trying. This is one thing somebody told me about Eberflus as I was working on the story and just kind of asking around, because one of the things I wanted to learn, guys, how many coaches have you talked to who say, I'm all about the details, right? And so I wanted to know, like, I've never sat in a film session with a coach, so like an NFL head coach, so I didn't know how rare that was. And a couple people who know him well say, like, that is rare. And one of the things about Eberflus is he is trying to win on the margins. Like, that is his thing. Like, he wants that extra yard, that extra step, anything that's going to help him to try to get this team to win when there's just such a slim margin of error.
I wonder how that translates to head coaching. I understand, like, watching film and, you know, being a positional coach, being a coordinator, and harping on the details, and you're rewarding when things are done right, all of that. But when it comes, where and how are those margins defined when you are the guy in charge of everything?
It's a great question, Dan, because nobody ever questioned Matt Eberflus's defensive coaching philosophies, right? Like, we know that that's what he's good at. So I do think that the way he kind of uses analytics when he talks about defense, how does that factor in a third down decision, a fourth down decision? You know, last year we saw the kickoff. They decided to go ahead and return all the time. You know, they had done some research and decided that was better for their team last year to do that. So I do think that the way his mind is about trying to win in those margins, whether it's just getting that one step closer, turning your toe towards the ball, is the same thing that he might think about when it's fourth and one. And not every decision is going to be right. Obviously, he had some ones that backfired last year. But you can kind of tell that he wants to win those situations. And he put the Bears put a lot of resources in their analytics department and having somebody in his ear who's kind of going through all these different scenarios about penalties and yard line and downs and situations and all that stuff. I mean, you guys saw the little clip from Hard Knocks where they were going through referee bios, right? Again, that's a way to – if your quarterback's got it in with the refs, it's winning on the margins, right? Giving you any kind of little edge you can get.
What do you think is the success of the Bears preseason, and where do you think they can improve?
Well, I think the success, Lawrence, is they went 4-0, so they're obviously going to the Super Bowl, so that's exciting. You know, it's so funny because I think, like, that the coaches, you know – just the simple aspect of we installed a plan and you guys executed the plan. You did what you're supposed to do so that we could win. Like, I think for the players to kind of see that out, even in a preseason way, is good. I heard you guys talk about the tackling. I think the tackling's been very sound. I think the discipline's been sound in terms of penalties. We've obviously seen them win the takeaway battle. Now, how is this going to translate into the regular season? Who knows? Because you're talking a lot about backup reps. But I do think that you've seen kind of little things that they harp on looking good in game situations.
At this point, is there a name is there somebody who's going to get cut that is going to shock anyone? Or have we said all the names? Whether it's Dominique Robinson or someone else. I mean, is there any presumed lock that you think isn't?
I don't think so, Dan. I mean, I know you've talked about Kari Blazingame a little bit, and like he's somebody that he's just been here. We just kind of assume that, but Shane Waldron hasn't used a fullback really. So that just guys that like fans are recognized. Noah Sewell's an interesting one to me. I'm of the belief that like there's too much athleticism there that you have to continue to see that out and see if he can stay healthy. But he would be a name. You mentioned Dominique Robinson. I'll say this about Daniel Hardy, too. I mean, maybe this trade kind of bounces Daniel Hardy off. But, you know, one thing we have to remember is every year there's somebody that Bears fans fall in love with during the preseason. Mm-hmm. Put him on their 53s. He gets cut. Everybody goes bananas. And then nobody picks him up and he makes the practice squad. So that could be a Reddy Stewart. That could be a Daniel Hardy. Like, I remember the Alex Bars days when people would be so upset about Alex Bars not making the 53, and then lo and behold, he's on the practice squad. So we could have scenarios like that. But in terms of big names, you know, I just think some of those recent day three draft picks are kind of the ones we'll be keeping an eye on over the next few days.
Fish, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. Great job with your piece with Matt Eberflus.
Yes, we loved it.
All right. Thanks again, guys. Take care.
That's Kevin Fishbane.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.